This week on Making Contact.
They're trying to make us think that the only healthy water there is coming out of a bottle and not out of our tap. And so we're relinquishing the rights of having fresh water come out of a tap. And we need to stop doing that. Water should not be for profit. It's for life.
We can ensure that water is safe and water is affordable for everyone.
Access to clean water is a matter of life and death for poor people across the globe. And that's the reality over 1 billion face today. On this edition, we'll hear about the problem of water domestically and abroad, and the community organizers who are creating solutions. I'm Pauline Bartolone, your host this week on Making Contact, an international radio program creating connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. Less than one half of 1% of the Earth's water can support the human race. Population growth compounds the problem, and every 20 years, the amount of water consumption doubles. Billions of people live without adequate sanitary services. Fresh water sources, such as wetlands, are being swallowed up by development. And industry has contaminated natural water supplies. Activists say the global water crisis is fueled by corporate control of the precious resource. But big business claims that privatization will lead to greater access to clean and safe water. But recent history has proved otherwise. Local government contracts with multinational companies have driven up prices, making water less affordable, especially for the poor. Companies who jack up prices oftentimes fail to provide the services they advertise. Consider the case of Manila, the capital of the Philippines. In 1997, public water services for the city of 20 million people were contracted to two private conglomerates. But they broke their promises to improve the city's water infrastructure, according to Frederick Farolan of the Water Vigilance Network, based in Manila. Farolan spoke about the city's concessions to the Lopez Group and another conglomeration made up of Ayala, United Utilities of UK, and the Mitsubishi Corporation.
These concession agreements in 1997 were the biggest in Asia, if not the world. It was a reaction, a knee-jerk reaction, to the entry of the concept of privatization during the 90s with neoliberalization, and also as a reaction to the poor performance of the government then, which provided initially public water services. When the both corporations were given the concession agreements, they promise better water delivery, better quality, cheaper water, and less water wasted. They have also promised to improve the capitalization and the infrastructure of water delivery in Metro Manila. After 5 years, none of those things happened. Maynila right now is undergoing a process of rehabilitation. It can no longer pay its debt. It no longer pays the government for the concession fees. It has failed to comply with its service obligations, it has promised. And even to the point that in 2003, there was even a cholera outbreak in one of the cities, one of the towns in Metro Manila, caused by the poor facilities in delivering water. What is ironic is that the current administration, instead of canceling the contract, is actually planning to bail out the company, pay Suez at least half of its investment, and try to buy the other stocks of Maynilad, which has become worthless, just to continue with its privatization program. It has even allowed Maynilad to raise water rates. On the other hand, we now go to the west, to the east zone run by Manila Water, which is financially doing better than Maynilad. But it has, again, given its promises, failed to comply completely with the provisions of the concession agreement. And under Philippine laws, public utilities are given a ceiling as to the profit that they can make. But Maynilad Water has far exceeded that ceiling. And the justification is that Manila Water is saying that it is not a public utility. It is a mere agent. agent of the government. So we have a funny situation where water services is not considered a public utility, and such thinking is even supported by a number of government lawyers. Unfortunately, the state, the government, is simply a reflection of the inequity, of the inequities, and the unfair governance system in a particular country. If the state is against the people and is not representative of the people, then you cannot expect a state or a government to protect the people and the people's right to water.
That was Frederick Farallon of the Philippines speaking at the 2005 World Social Forum in Brazil. Privatizing water services isn't inherently bad for customers, says Barbara Springer, a community activist in the small town of Felton, California. Felton's water services have been privately and locally owned for over 100 years, and the town has historically enjoyed healthy and plentiful water. But as Springer explained at the 2005 UN Environment Day in San Francisco, everything changed for Felton when a German multinational, RWE, bought out the town's water company.
In Felton, we're very used to private water. We've had private water since the beginning of our water system in the 1880s. The difference was you had to live in the community to own a share in the water system. So this system perked along for quite a while until about the 1960s when it was bought by a company called Citizens Utilities. Nobody much noticed what was going on. It seemed to work well. And then Citizens Utilities, a little bit later, the rest of our valley became public, set up a public water system. But our part of the valley in Felton stayed with the private water company, and that's a separate, rather interesting story. At any rate, so Citizens Utility ran the system for about another 40 years until 2002. And in 2002, our water system was bought by a company called California American that you may have heard about today. California American sent out notices to all of us, and they said, you know, they were buying this system. We didn't think much about it. They said rates wouldn't go up. We thought, okay, we were used to this. It wasn't any big deal. And then the next year, we get another little notice, and it says that RWE is buying the parent company of Cal-Am. Again, we had our lives to live. We didn't pay much attention. And they told us that, gee, rates wouldn't go up because of this. So we sort of went along. And then we get a notice in little tiny print telling us that they're asking for a rate increase of 74%. So then we started paying a little more attention. And they tried to tell us, well, gee, no, it wasn't really 74% because they had some other deal they were doing. It would only be 6%. This went on and on. And that's when we realized we needed to get active and we needed to figure out what was going on. What we did was we had a two-prong approach originally because we didn't know how to solve this problem. We knew all of a sudden we start realizing, boy, there are these private companies that are trying to buy up water in the world. And it's not like our sleepy little private companies that basically did a good job and basically took a fair profit. These guys were very aggressive. They were aggressive in trying to maximize their profits, in doing whatever they had to do to make as much money out of these monopolies that they had as they possibly could. So our two-prong approach was, first, we had to get the community aware of what was going on, and we had to build community spirit. Then the other prong that we did is we realized we had to be smart. We were up against an opponent with unlimited resources, huge budgets for legal fights, huge budgets for PR fights. And the only way we were going to do this is if we absolutely knew what all the numbers were and knew how to move through a process for us to gain control of our system. And that's what we did. And we realized wait a minute, we have to change the terms of the debate. These people in every community they went into, they start by trying to set the terms of the debate. And what they did in ours was they tried to scare people that this is a massive undertaking, you can't afford it, this system is worth $40 million, it's, you know, on and on and on to scare people. But we put together the correct numbers, we put together a viable alternative to just join back with the rest of the valley like it had been in the 1960s, and people started trusting our numbers and trusting our plan, and I don't even want to say our plan, because what it turned out to be was the community's plan, okay? We grew it, we brought in more and more people until we now probably have at least half the community on the mailing list and people very much involved in this fight. So what we're up to now is we're 2 months away from our vote to authorize a bond to buy this water system. And we're really seeing what CalAM is going to do, what RWE is going to do. They've sent out mailings with dollar bills burning up, claiming that this is going to cost more than anyone could ever imagine. And then their latest thing that they're doing is they're now suing us over our ballot statement. They do not like the fact that we have said that they have guaranteed profits. They've said they don't like the fact that we're talking about the huge increases that they're asking for. I guess what I want to leave people with is that we absolutely can win these fights. We can ensure that water is safe and water is affordable for everyone. But the only way we can do it is if we work together. If we work smart and work together and absolutely keep our eye on the prize of taking control of this resource publicly.
That was Barbara Springer, community organizer in Felton, California. For some communities, the price of water is not nearly as problematic as its quality. Rural people in the U.S. and abroad suffer from water contamination from pesticide runoff and other agricultural waste. In low-income, immigrant farm communities in Tulare County, California, tap water is so toxic that it causes rashes and other health problems. Wastewater and chemicals are poorly regulated, and lead from cracked pipes due to ailing infrastructure further pollute the water supply. Residents pour Clorox bleach into their foul-smelling wells to cover up the odor. And in some towns, residents are even required by the city to sign affidavits saying they will only use bottled water. Guadalupe Nunez of Tonyville spoke about the hardships her community faces at the 2005 UN World Environment Day.
I hope that all of us here could come together and unite because it's a real injustice what's happening to us.
El agua aquí sale mal, sucia.
The water in our town comes out bad. It smells bad. It's dirty. When you boil the water, it develops a white residue.
No tenemos agua limpia. Lavamos los trastes nada más.
We sometimes use the water to wash our dishes, but we can't really cook with it. We boil it sometimes to be able to cook with it.
¿Por qué pagamos tanto por agua que está tan mal?
Why do we have to pay so much for water that is no good? Sometimes we have to pay $130.
Nada más es el punto.
Sometimes we have to pay $180 every 2 months for water that we can't even use. We can't cook or drink with it.
Siento tanta tristeza de mirar tanto niño enfermo a veces.
I get very sad thinking about so many sick children, some of whom have lead in their blood.
Bastante gente también dice enfermarse.
There are a lot of sick people in our town. Many times, some of them would like to come to these types of events to speak out, but they can't. They have to work. They have children to support.
En juntarse y hablar todos juntos en reunión.
There are a lot of people getting sick, especially children. We have noticed a lot of health problems. I've started collecting water samples and observing the changes in the water. I'm here today because we need some help.
Vivimos lejos de la ciudad.
We live far from other towns. We're isolated. It's always a struggle to educate other people in the town. but it's hard.
No tiene transportación.
People don't have transportation options. It's hard to get places. They can't miss work.
Estuve yo juntando agua por mucho tiempo.
I was collecting water samples for a while and analyzing it. The first time that we were here, we were given water, trucked in water to Tonyville.
Eso estuvo casi como por un año más o menos que nos estuvieron dando el agua.
That happened for about a year.
Ahora yo quisiera decirles esto.
Now I ask this, is it fair? We are getting canal water for drinking and we're also getting trucked in water.
A veces que amanecen perros tirados dentro del canal.
We are paying a lot for the water and we don't understand why we're paying twice for two sources of water if it's coming from the same distribution pipes.
¿Saben también esto? Quería decirles.
The question that I have is this. Does it make any sense to be spending $5 billion on wars and sending our kids over to fight there when we have so many problems here at home? Does that make sense?
Y a los hijos también sin padre, porque no es justo que los tengan por allá tan lejos.
Families are suffering when they have to go, kids have to go to war or their parents have to go to war to fight. Families are left to suffer. Does it make sense?
No es justo.
It's not fair.
Ya es tiempo de que nos juntamos y nos
It's time for all of us to come together, to unite, to be have a better state, a better community.
Ahora yo también quisiera comunicarles esto.
We have meters, but the meter is buried. No one comes to look at the meter, to read the meter. It's buried, and supposedly they've told us that they're charging us based on the previous year's water use.
¿Y ustedes creen que eso es justo?
Do you think that is fair?
Cuando yo tengo que
when I have to take off from work so that I can come here and talk to you and share my story. My husband is sick, so I have to work to pay for his bills.
¿Qué dicen que van a subir los impuestos?
I was listening to the news the other day and I heard on the news that they were planning on raising our taxes.
Juntan mucho dinero y las tuberías no las arreglan. Siempre están llenas.
The government collects taxes, but what do they do with it? They haven't spent any money on our infrastructure, on our water system. The plumbing is old. Also in our town, we only have one street lamp for the whole town.
Ojalá que puedan ayudarnos. Se lo suplico.
I ask you for your help. Not so much for me, because I'm older, but for all of the kids and the young people in our town.
Por favor, en la unión está la fuerza. Muchas gracias.
We'll have more about water in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information, or for cassette or CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit us on the web at radioproject.org. The struggle for clean and accessible water is not just about what flows from the tap. Paula Ramos is coordinator of the Oakland-based Environmental Justice Coalition for Water, which represents 60 grassroots groups in California. Ramos says water-related issues in the state reflect a larger national trend. This August, the EJCW is releasing a report called Thirsty for Justice, a comprehensive study of water struggles in California. I spoke with Ramos about the report and the movement for clean and accessible water for all people.
When we talk about access to water, we're not only talking about drinking water. We also have members that are working on various issues related to access to clean shorelines, clean fish. We have other communities that are dealing with issues related to contaminated sewage waters overflowing in their communities, flooding, constant flooding. Up north in the northern part of California, there are other communities, often tribal communities, who are dealing with the devastation of their rivers and their streams through damming and that sort of thing, where the salmon runs have been decimated, and many of the tribes depend on the salmon for their, not only their nutrition, but their entire livelihood.
So for the past few years, grassroots groups have been working around the privatization of water. Is this the root problem of all the water policy problems you're working on here in California?
No, I would say privatization is yet another sort of symptom of a much deeper problem. But our work during the past 6 or 7 years has really shown that the problem is that there is a very small elite group of people who control water resources in California and who have made decisions about our water, whether it's drinking water or water for the environment or, you know, whether or not to privatize systems. And they make very important decisions without much public participation. Any public input really comes in at the end. And so we have entire political structures that are designed deliberately, we believe deliberately exclude communities, and particularly communities of color, low-income communities, tribal communities, what we, you know, refer to as the disenfranchised. So I would say that that's really the root cause.
So you mentioned that there's some historical reasons behind this root cause of lack of democratic policy around water policy. What are some of those historical reasons?
Well, it's really quite fascinating story. Going back even to the Gold Rush era, when miners, there was basically a rush, you know, to stake claims. And of course, water was a big tool for extracting gold ore. And so basically, over 150 years ago, really, there were structures that were set in place and policies and laws and institutions that grew around the notion of whoever gets there first has title to that river, that stream. And then from there grew through the early agricultural empires of the state over 100 years ago, again, building up on that system. Whoever has a piece of land next to the river or a stream has the rights to the water of that stream. So water very early on is seen as a property right, and the right to have water and to use water becomes a property issue. Clearly, if you don't have property, you don't have a water right. And to this day in California, you have landowner-based water districts. And the really appalling thing here is that they're landowner-based districts precisely because to be a part of this district, you have to be a landowner. To vote for the board of directors, you have to be a landowner to run for a seat. And oftentimes, the number of votes that you get is proportional to the value of your land or how many acres you have. So again, it's a very exclusionary system.
How does the struggle here in California compare to struggles in other countries?
Well, the first thing to note is that the multinationals that have been operating abroad are the same ones that are trying to get a foothold in on our public water resources here. Certainly, you know, RWE Thames is a multinational German/British conglomerate with American subsidiaries that have been acquiring water systems in California. Clearly, it's basically the same corporations. The other thing to note is abroad, it's usually been, they've been able to get in, whether it's in Bolivia or South Africa or some of the other countries that have more recently had these struggles. You notice that these companies are going into largely low-income, marginalized communities who probably lack the resources, that the local governments or state governments or governments in general lack the resources perhaps that they need to operate the system or provide water. And there's also clearly pressure from international institutions like the IMF and others to privatize those resources under the sort of guise that they'd be more efficient. What we criticize is our state government and our federal governments, basically they've turned the other way and said, this is not our problem. We are not in the business of providing clean drinking water. We basically don't have much money to give you. You figure it out on your own. And they've actually been, I think, more explicit. They've actually oftentimes sought out buyers for their systems.
So you work with the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water. Justice is the key word here, right? So can you talk about how low income and people of color are particularly affected by water policy and access to water, and why base your movement in environmental justice as opposed to something else?
Environmental justice grows out of the social justice and civil rights struggles of the 60s, which of course are, you know, based on the discrimination and really exclusion of people of color. And so environmental justice really is just another aspect of that. So the early environmental justice struggles really come out of the notion that people have a right to a clean environment regardless of their income, regardless of their race, ethnicity, what have you. And with water, you know, water is just, together with toxics and air quality and some of the other environmental issues, we're basically saying the same thing.
What I hear from what you're saying is that the problems around water are far and wide. So we have problems around privatization, we have contamination problems, we have lack of access. What is the string that kind of ties them all together?
Well, it's people wanting to be a part of the solutions. You know, whether you're talking about privatization or the struggles up north with the tribal communities or, you know, whatever it is that you're talking about, I mean, if you really pay attention to what people are saying, is that they want to be the ones making decisions about their local water resources. So it's not okay for Nestle and the multinationals to go and tap into someone's local water resource and bottle it. You know, it's not okay. And why does that happen? Because governments, they never alert the communities that are having their springs tapped into and their groundwater depleted by a bottling company. So fundamentally, what ties all of this together is a lack of public participation. And now people are rising up and they're saying, no, this has gone on for too long. If we truly live in a democratic society, then we're going to be a part of this. You know, there are laws on the books that clearly protect public participation and the right for the public to be involved at every step of the process. So what people are saying is, okay, well, if there's going to be a bottling plant or there's going to be a private company coming in or there's going to be, you know, another dam built, whatever project or decision is being considered, people need to be a part of that from the very beginning. And that means from the initial studies, the analyses, the discussions. And so I think that's really what ties all of this together is public participation, true public involvement, meaningful public involvement, which is really the cornerstone of a democratic society.
That was Paula Ramos of the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water. And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. Thanks for listening. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Making Contact is an independent production, funded primarily by generous gifts from people in the community. We are committed to providing a unique forum for voices and opinions not often heard in the mass media. For a cassette, CD copy, or information packet of program number 3205, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Justin Beck, associate producer, Dorian Taylor, communications manager, Esther Mania, outreach coordinator, Tom Evans, development associate, Emily Polk, production fellow, Megan Kaiser, production intern. And I'm your host and associate producer, Pauline Bartolone.